previously on Slaughtered. Okay, I'm Copstick with fantastic guests, the authoress of Polly and Morag, subtitle, Compare the Beavers, Jennifer Kennedy, with my very dear friend and Minge specialist, in fact, our voice of the Minge, Elaine Miller, and the absolutely delightful Daniel Downey.
They don't mind if you say really, really vulgar stuff as long as you smile nicely.
And you do, if I may say so, say really, really vulgar stuff. It's fantastic.
I actually quite like cunt, to be honest.
Cunt's
I think it's
a great
it's
word.
Quite an honest, fantastic word, and I know it's offensive, but I think we should reclaim it.
And it's a glorious thing. They've stayed away with their managements and their PRs and all the rest of the shit that comes with it. And see, the industry is not here, and this is only about the comedians. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And what I hope is that people, everybody, Edinburgh, the industries, the fans, remember this and remember how it feels when the real people were still here. Because it's not. I mean, it's never going to be like the Fringe was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But it could be another, better, slightly different.
I think it maybe like depends on what you want from the Fringe, you know. Like I very much like two people that I look up to a lot in the scene are Gary Little and Raymond Mearns, and so they had like a joint show on 2019 around the same time. So my show's on at 2:00, and so. I mean, just watching Raymond Mearns flyer people is an absolute tour de force. It's phenomenal. And just, I would like pick up just how to get people about
it. It's a show in itself.
It's amazing, isn't it? And I would like learn off these guys. And like Raymond would just say stuff like, look, your job is to come here, make people laugh and make money. That's what you're here to do, you know? And like, I suppose if you're, that's the attitude that I've taken, and I think a lot of people at the Scott Comfest have as well, is we just want to, we can make money by doing our gigs here. Yeah, we're not trying to get promotion, or we're not maybe even that bothered about reviewers or that coming in, you know. It's just, let's get audiences in, let's make them laugh, and try and make a wee bit of money as we can, you know.
Because, I mean, the whole, how many stars have you got, how much money did you make, how many reviewers did you get in, blah, blah, blah. That all came with the comics, with the stand-ups, with the industrial comics. And that's only been, well, I remember, I am unfeasibly old, but I remember 1991, I was here doing a comedy show, and it was, I had letter-setted our,
amazing.
I know, do you know what letter-set is?
I'm going to pretend. I just get a nodded here.
It's like a wee, you get, you, what you no, do no, is you
let,
buy.
Let him think. No,
is it like Spirograph?
No, well, you buy a page uh-huh. of letters.
Right.
Which you, and you choose your font and everything.
I think I know what you're talking about.
And then
I remember these from
like
primary
transfers.
School. Yeah, yeah.
That's what you do them like transfer. So I'd letter-setted our A4 poster. And we were out, myself and the guy that I was doing the show with, we were out with our pot of wallpaper paste, as you do fly posting, because you did everything yourself. None of this fucking PR nonsense. And we were physically threatened when I put one of our posters over David Baddiel's big toe. Because that was the first time Avalon came and with tenement-sized, you know, posters. And I just remember thinking, this is not right. Because, I mean, there's always been that saying that people come to the Fringe to get laid, to get drunk, and to get famous, and not necessarily in that order. But the stand-ups from the 90s and their big management and their big PR change, I mean, it was, they poisoned it. And I kind of thought last year it was a wee chance, you know, for and you know, I was fancifully wittering on about green shoots and blah, blah, blah. And then when I arrived here this year, it was like, oh, for fuck's sake, the first thing you see is 25 acres of open air bar. But a week on, and I've been to nothing really but free fringe shows and the Scottish Comedy Festival, and Elaine's tour, and it's absolutely fantastic.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, like I say, it's all Rick and Sully like deserve huge credit, and Ben for starting it as well. Like they've created that ethos, and
what ethos?
Just that, I think the ethos of doing a fringe for comics, I suppose, you know?
Yep.
One where, like, you can fill your room and you can make a wee bit of money. And I think that Monkey Barrel as well are doing a really great job of doing that.
Well, are they? You see? You see? Number one, okay, great. Do a fringe for comics. You're not at a fringe for comics. You're at an arts festival. So
yes,
maybe comics should think about fucking the fuck off and having their own festival like they do everywhere else and stop I'm sorry, I'm not talking directly.
No, it's okay.
He's looking a wee bit frightened there.
I am frightened. Okay.
And maybe this is what needs to happen. Industrial comedy needs to be kicked off an arts fringe. Elaine?
I'm really enjoying it because as you're speaking, it's occurred to me that the sense of humour has got lost because the PR people are in on it, which isn't a criticism because it has become an industry and a lot of people make a lot of money and that's how, you know, that's how systems work. But who was it a few years ago that got into trouble for putting penises in all the posters?
Oh, that was Cunt in the Gang.
And that was hilarious.
Genius. Yeah, exactly.
Genius.
Yeah, that's the sort of thing the fringe
actually
should be about.
Actually funny.
Yep. Yeah.
And they got absolutely threatened and eviscerated.
Yeah.
And I've not seen Cunt back
since. There's a lot to be said for ripping the pish.
Aha. Uh-huh. So this has got me really thinking because you're right. The silliness and the gentle jostling and what is wrong with putting a penis in front of Daniel Sloss's face on a big poster?
I mean,
like,
it was
really
an absolute joy.
Is that a first?
And it was also genius PR. And it's you know, one of the that wasn't going to talk about this now, but the kind of end game of the way the fringe has been, the comedy fringe has been going, is that now you're going, rejoice, fringe fans, rejoice. The 2021 fringe is going to happen. The first tickets are on sale. Live fucking nation. Live nation. Do we know how... I mean, they're bigger than God.
Yeah.
They own the O2 arenas. In whose universe should they be allowed within 100 miles of any kind of fringe festival? It is an obscenity. They go, right, we quite like to... Obviously, I'm not saying that this is what they thought. You go, I would quite like to... obviously, they don't speak in a Glaswegian accent, but we feel we'd quite like to have a comedy presence at the Edinburgh Fringe, so we're going to just buy the Corn Exchange. Whoa. Hello? No. Or that's fine, you buy it, that's big business. Get out. I know it's not necessarily the individual comics who are going, oh, me. But who, what halfway decent person can put their hand on their heart and go, actually, as my fringe promoter this year is Live Nation.
Yeah.
But who makes that call then, Kate? Because it sounds like you're talking about putting a little bit of gatekeeping to keep comedy at the fringe. Who decides where that cutoff is between
me,
Live Nation?
I decide. As soon as I assume complete control, there will not be a single venue of a capacity that is over 400 seats.
So it's going to be... So if Live Nation have 7 rooms at 399 seats, you'll let them, but 400 seats you won't.
Where are they going to buy for? If they want to play that game, I suppose I'd have to. But this is about, they're not going to do that because that's too much trouble. They want big, and a lot of comics want big, and a lot of management won't.
Well, because that's not their game.
See, that's not their game. They don't play that game.
See, coming back to Monkey Barrel, then, kind of what I think is interesting, you know, is that a lot of these comics you're talking about, Kate, people who I think probably could sell out big rooms,
yep,
are choosing to do their shows at Monkey Barrel now.
Yeah, for a night.
Well, to be fair, like in 2019, there was a lot of, I would describe that type of comic that did full runs there, you know, and so I think that's got to be a positive sign in that they're weighing it up and they're going, no, we would rather do this room, feels, you know, and presumably cost them a hell of a lot less, they have less people in, and maybe it feels more like a fringe gig, you know.
I'm going to do something terrible here. I'm sorry. I'm apologising in advance. But I just feel that Donald Campbell, my English teacher at Paisley Grammar, would not let that fewer people, actually, not less people, fewer people.
I was
people.
Terrified. I'm glad that's all it was, to be fair. Oh, my God. I'm going to lob myself off this mezzanine.
No, I mean, I think, so I was kind of thinking about this year, and apart from, is it just me or am I sounding very negative?
No, you said it's fantastic. Things are really coming around in the past week.
I think
yeah.
It's...
Okay. So apart from... I would be very happy to do something catastrophic out at the Corn. I'd be very happy to strap myself to the front door of the Corn Exchange and try and stop people going in. Because it's wrong. It's an abomination. Elaine?
Because people haven't had long to practice, they've not had long to realise that it's possible to put a show on, so their material is less polished than it would have been if they'd gone to the Australian circuit and the New Zealand circuit and they'd been to Brighton and then they'd come up to Edinburgh with a fully polished show that you would land up putting on at Live Nation. So people are trying stuff that's a bit new and having to think on their feet, and it's really refreshing, it's really, really funny.
Elaine, how much warning did the artists get? Because we talked about how the fringe is that's Jamash, but you know, at the start of July there was nothing planned, wasn't there? What was that sort of run up like for a performer?
It was all right if you didn't have a venue. If you're waiting on confirmation of a venue, I think that if you were in anything that Edinburgh University owned, it was 2 weeks beforehand that it got confirmed.
I know the experience was very, it's funny, you know, because there was a reduced fee, wasn't there, for registering your show. I mean, it wasn't a huge reduction. And whereas before, you might have like a couple of months of ticket sales. I think I had 2 weeks, I think. I mean, yeah, it was, you know. So it did feel, I actually just remember I was out walking the dog and Rick phoned me and was just like, can you put a show on? And I was like, yeah, of course, aye. I think probably more just because I wanted to support the venue more than anything. I was like, I'll do my 2019 show and I will do new stuff, I'll put new things in that I want, you know.
I just want to check here, not wishing to, you know, undercut the seriousness of this comment. Walking the dog, Jennifer, is that any kind of like euphemism for anything? I mean, you were literally walking your dog.
Walking the dog,
walking,
yeah.
Walking the dog, I've never heard of that.
Oh, good, that's fine, just checking.
So also, no, just to make it all very clear, I was walking the dog, yeah, that's what
yeah.
I was doing.
Yeah, no, I'm sure we could make something up, though.
Good, also, because I was beginning to feel guilty that we hadn't heard from Jennifer.
I mean, there's dogging, right?
The song Walking the Dog is a euphemism for wanking.
Is it?
Oh, is it really?
I didn't know that.
There you go, that's new on me as well.
And does that apply to men and women, or is it just a male one?
I think it's universal.
Universal?
Yeah.
So back to you, that is a very good reason for coming along. Elaine, I am really unconvinced by this whole, oh, we need to polish material, blah, blah. If you think of yourself as a professional, and I'm not looking at you, if you think of yourself as a professional comedian, and I've heard all the excuses for work in progress and all of that, I've heard all of those excuses. If you think of yourself as a professional comedian and you're making your money and you're as a full-time comedian and you're expecting people to pay to come and see you, work in progress is basically practicing. Now, very occasionally I know that the Royal Opera House will charge like a nominal £5 for people to be allowed to see a dress rehearsal of an opera. This is a massive, massive production. If you, as a professional comic, cannot take to the first, to the even the first public performance, a show that you know is solid, then really, fuck off and get another job. Really, genuinely. You might not know how big the laughs. There might be something in there that suddenly somebody's offended by. There probably will be not issues, but things where you go, oh, I should be a wee bit slower here. A bit. That does not excuse you. No, it's only a work in progress. You can't say anything nasty about it. And if you have been sitting on your arse, or, I don't know, delivering for Amazon for a year and a half, then what the fuck else have you been doing if not living in hope that one day somebody will say, all right, boys, you can get back on a stage. And you know, every other art form. I saw this morning, because I was asked, they didn't know they were taking their lives in their hands. I saw a youth theatre group do a children's production of Aladdin. It was, you know, it had choreography, it was new writing, there was music, there was. They had put it to great. If they can do that and not go, well, we didn't have very much time, then what the fuck do stand-up comics, you know, how much special, you know, understanding do they need? It's not fair. It's not fair. It is the least complicated art form. I'm not saying it's the easiest, but really, I cannot be doing with this. And one of the great things is that a huge percentage of that, well, we didn't have a new show or we weren't sure, blah, has been taken away. And genuine comics go, well, I'll give this a go. Or, now who was, I saw somebody the other day, and it was, look, okay, it's not direct stand-up comedy, but Jack Doherty, I think he's brilliant, doing a show which is kind of like more a one-man show than a stand-up set. He put it in, he did what grown-up people used to. You do maybe a dress rehearsal, a wee preview for friends, and then you're there. Now, then you go, I thought that bit would go really well. It didn't. But you do not ask for a whole special dispensation of work in progress. Or you do what you do, which is a little bit of old stuff,
yeah.
And then you go, I'll work in this, I'll work in this, I'll work in this. And then, if you're any good, within 3 or 4 days, you've pretty much got a new show.
I say, again, I think I take that from learning from guys like Raymond, Delaney, you know, and Gary, that I don't think I would ever see Raymond. I don't want to put words in his mouth, obviously, advertising his show as like a working pro. He would do this. He would just take like his club classics and then would put in
new stuff,
yeah.
Or find a way, because this is an arts festival, to give it a theme, to give it a narrative arc, if you want, because there's a it's kind of a different approach getting people to sit for an hour and be engaged than it is with that kind of bam, 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 hit and run for a 20-minute set.
Is your problem then just with the fact that the shows are advertised? Because presumably most of the work in progress shows will be that, do you know what I mean? There'll be established material with new bits in. So is your issue with the fact that they're being advertised as work in progress, like, oh, this, it's almost like, oh, this might not be good?
Yeah. Yeah. My.
If they just advertised it as like their show,
it's a new
and
show.
Or not even a new show, just like just not mention that it's work in progress. Just here is a show with some new bits in it.
Yeah,
you'd be more.
I mean, genuinely, there's no other. There's no other profession gets to do that. You know, it might be, well, you don't get an architect going, okay, it's a kind of a new vibe I've got going with this skyscraper.
I'm not sure if this balcony will hold.
It's the first time that I've gone with this kind of shape of building. It might not be great.
I had folk on my tour the other day, and they were air traffic controllers at Aberdeen Airport. They were on one of my comedy tours. And I was like, when was the last time you you landed a plane, got a plane in? And they were like, it's been a year. And I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
I was like, oh, so you're telling me when I get on a plane again, the person who's landing it is not going to have done it for a year? And they're like, yeah, we've pretty much forgotten how to do it, to be honest. Yeah. We're gonna have to. So I was like, I am not getting on a plane at least for another 5 years or something.
And if something had happened a wee bit dodgy, you would not have got, well, they haven't done it for a year. Nobody's done anything for a year. You know, it's just, stand-up comedy is probably one of the least important things to happen on the planet. It's not saving lives. It's not doing anybody any good apart from the stand-up comic involved if he gets the money. And they just want to be cut so much fucking slack they could make themselves a hammock. Sorry, Jennifer.
No, I was going to say 2 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever it was, I worked as a reviewer for The Fringe. I was the shittest reviewer that you can possibly imagine.
Talk us through
that. I worked for Diva magazine, and it was LGBTQ. And so Diva doesn't have a large circulation. It was my first time doing it, so I got every shit show that you can possibly imagine that you could go to. And just
was it kind of LGBTQI++?
Lots and lots
rainbow,
of pluses. Lots of pluses. There were shows where three people were there. There was one show where it was only me that turned up and the entire audience. A lot of them were very unpolished, but there were some that I felt sorry for, because I think if you go with the attitude I want to see a perfect show, then you're going back to the industrialised shows.
Such
so I think there is having to give it a go. So there were some that I thought were, one I remember, a woman dangled for a rope for 45 minutes eating an apple bare naked, showing the entire audience her genitals, and I just thought, That was it. 45 minutes. It was me, two other guys. One guy had his hand inside his Mac, and I'm pretty sure I know what he was doing. And I had to go and write a review on that. So I would have loved to have written a shit review, but I just got home and I thought, I can't.
And all you need is 5 minutes.
Exactly.
But that is Fringe.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It's interesting.
It is.
Having a go.
With the industrial acts, as you call them, I do think if you're coming to see one like that, a really big name, go and see one where you've got no idea what it is and you can tell there's hardly anybody there, because I think that balances it up. And actually, although, you know, most of them are shit, to be honest, and I'm very sorry if you went to watch it based on my reviews, because I gave most of them 3 or 4 stars because I was too scared to get them a shit review. But yeah, give it a chance. And yeah, sometimes it might be a bit crap, but that makes you appreciate the other ones more.
But that is what a Fringe is for.
Yeah.
If you want to see polished industrial comedy, it shouldn't be at a Fringe. And what I've come to realise, although I'm fast talking myself out of a job, it should not be an arts festival, Fringe. Do you think comedy's an art?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair to say comedy's an art form, definitely.
Yeah, I'd agree. Comedy's an art form.
An art form.
Yeah, I would say.
Elaine?
If you're measuring art as something that moves people and influences their behaviour and changes the way that they see things and makes them think, then yes, I've had plenty of experiences in comedy venues that have done that for me far more effectively than, you know, watching a woman, which I didn't see the show, but I'm interested to know how big an apple was. Because it was 45 minutes.
She took very small bites.
That's a big apple.
It turned
you're
out
you're supposed to eat those cooking apples either.
I did actually see her a bit later on in the bar, and she did tell me apparently it was to represent Adam and Eve, and the rope was something and the apple was the first out, and I got very, very confused. It didn't help me in any way whatsoever, but I think, like you say, a lot of comedy, particularly the really, really good comics, make a strong message as they go as well. So
we have it, the very, very good comics.
But the very good comics to me aren't necessarily the big names, though. I mean, I know she is quite good now, but I think of the first time I saw Joe Caulfield, the first time I saw Jen Brister, the first time I saw Zoe Lyons. Now, they are big names now, but the first time I saw them, they weren't, and they were just as good then. Sue Perkins, first time I saw her, 3 people in the audience. That was however many years ago.
Do you think it's okay to use the Fringe? So, like, a lot of comedians will use the Fringe to build a club set for the rest of the year, you know? So if what you're saying, you know, if they're not charging, if it's like a pay what you want show, and they're basically going, because I speak to a lot of people who do that exact thing, you know, they're like, this fringe, I'm using the festival to create a club set that I can use, and that, because it's their profession at the end of the day, you know what I mean? That's their job.
Yeah, and I think it's that just give it a go as well. If somebody wants to try it for the very first time, so I did just a 5-minute set 3 or 4 years ago at the Monkey Barrel, and I'd never done it in my life before, but it was a free fringe show, and as far as I was concerned, it's free. Mm-hmm. So I felt a little bit more reassured. If people had paid it, I felt mortified, and it was just a brilliant starting point to say, okay, let's give it a go. So yeah. And I think that the fringe has got a place to play in that. A ready-made audience, give it a go and then see where you go after that.
Because, I mean, I would agree with that, because it's something creative.
Yeah.
You know, as long as, because that one of the prerequisites of creativity and arts, an arts fringe, an arts festival, it is about creating something new, but it's just that comedy at this festival has turned it into an industry sphere, and it's horrible.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
And you're, I've gone 9 years without ever meeting Daniel.
Yeah, and your point as well, I totally agree with. I would love it if no venue took more than 300, 200, 300, 400 people maximum. Okay. I think that would make a massive difference.
There's a layer of performers that we've not mentioned, and that's, as an international festival, that's the visitors we'll have from overseas, largely from the States, where you might get people like Bill Burr or John Panette or any number of people over the years, and a lot of bodies are attracted to Edinburgh by those headline acts. And obviously, we're not seeing those this year because there's no time.
Sorry, I was attempting to ask Ewan if there was any more Iron Brew, so I didn't hear.
Ewan, is there any more Iron Brew?
Right, is there any more anything?
There is just the evil stuff.
Sorry?
Just the evil stuff.
Oh, just the evil stuff. Sorry. Well, in that case, I'm terribly sorry. We are now... Well, sorry.
No, it's fine.
I'm becoming...
What was this? She was talking about either about rolling and shiting that as well, or about this.
This is a foreplay.
And I don't believe in foreplay. Honestly...
Copstick, just go and walk the dog.
You know, foreplay is like, you know, when comics do the ball, I do 45 minutes of warm-up, a couple of shit jokes, and then, you know, no, I'm not, you know, we either know that we're going to fuck, in which case, you fuck, and it's like, you know, it's a good comic, so make me laugh, then I'll go home.
Daniel, how much do you want that really good review?
Daniel's looking very, very scared just now.
He's already got it, sorry. I didn't really mean to get this physically close to you quickly.
I did.
but I'm...
So we can start recording
this.
Rick Molland phoned me and said, like, Daniel, Kate wants you to go on her podcast. He's like, well, I can't do it because I'm doing an MC. And I'm like, oh mate, can you not get out of it? I'm a little bit scared, I'm a little bit nervous about it. He's like, no, you'll be fine, mate, you'll be fine. I'm like, fuck, where are you, Rick? I need you here right now.
We have welcomed into our midst. All right, it's my excuse for getting to rub my ancient, rattled body up against it. What is that noise?
Sorry, carry on.
Stephen's doing something below the table.
Rub my ancient, rattled body up against... Daniel, to be fair, advertised for an hour during his stand-up show as his really quite impressively turgid Bobby.
No. I did not. No. I said I used the words I'm being pretty generous to myself here, right? That was something like, hello, I'm Daniel, I've got a huge bobby. That's not what happened. That was
whenever
that could be next year's show. Yeah, no,
it was a bit more show and tell.
Yeah, that was how I interpreted it. Right. You know? And you have to be careful with all
I'm things. Happy for that to be published, yeah. To be fair. Like, yeah, Daniel's.
You have to be careful, Daniel, you see, because it's all about how audiences interpret it.
Of course,
it,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So anyways, what I heard was, I'm Daniel, I've got a massive bobby. I'll see you later. Anyway.
And here I am, this is it.
Exactly. And he's squashed into a corner. Right, so this was slaughtered, and we've not only got the podcast, we have got ourselves a fucking website, which is www.podcast.com. copyright.co.uk. How good is that? Go and send us some hate mail.